Welcome to the deep dive.
Okay, so today we're doing something a bit different. We're unpacking the minutes from a local meeting.
Yeah, specifically the Caribou Lake Property Owners Association annual membership meeting.
Exactly. Held August 30th, 2025. And our goal here is really to pull out the key insights from these, you know, pretty detailed notes, give you a shortcut to what's happening on the ground in this specific community.
And it's really quite fascinating. These minutes give us this micro-level view of some really big macro-level concerns, things like infrastructure, invasive species management.
Right. How a community actually comes together.
Precisely. It's a real-world snapshot.
Okay. So let's start with the broader context. The county commissioner's update, this was Ginny Storley. Mm. She talked about several new building projects. There's a North Shore transfer station, new apartments going up, one by UP Yonder, another on Gunflint.
So clear signs of development.
Yeah. And also expanding the transfer stations in Hovland and Tofte, plus adding on to the public safety building.
If you connect that to the bigger picture, I mean, these updates really show active growth, right? Wow. And the necessary infrastructure improvements that have to go along with it.
Definitely. It shows how the community's evolving.
Yeah, constantly changing.
And there's more future stuff, too. A bike trail extension plan for Tofte and Lutzen next year.
Oh, interesting.
And then a really big one. The Highway 61 rebuild scheduled for 2027, that's going to cover Tofte all the way to the county line.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, here's where it gets really interesting for daily life. These are tangible projects. They'll directly impact commutes, tourism, everything.
Absolutely. Major changes on the horizon there.
So shifting gears a bit, let's look inside the association itself, their own business.
The internal workings.
Right. They started by approving the 2024 minutes. Standard procedure, motion by Tim Nelson, second by Bob Reed.
Got out of that paper trail.
Then board elections. Julie Binger stepped down. They thanked her for her service. And they reelected quite a few people. Mike Nicklow, Sharon Hickson-Platzer, Larry Mullen, Fred Morris, Charlie Austin, and Gene Anderson.
So a lot of continuity there.
Yeah. Motion for that slate by Tim Nelson, second by Sally Wesby.
You know, it's easy to gloss over this stuff, the minutes, the elections, but it raises an important question. Why does this procedural stuff matter so much?
A point.
Well, it's really the bedrock, isn't it? For any functioning community group, it ensures things keep running, keeps everyone accountable.
Yeah, transparency and continuity. Okay, let's dig into the money, the financial overview. Charlie Austin gave this report covering September 1st, 2024 to August 30th, 2025.
The fiscal year, basically.
Right. Total income, $7,802.80. And two big chunks here, $2,260 from donations Rusty Crayfish Fund.
Okay. Note that.
And $3,750 from SSD reimbursement. That's the Special Service District Fund helping pay for things.
Got it. Now, total expenses before the crayfish stuff were $2,613.51. But then, expenses specifically for Rusty Crayfish efforts were $7,270.43.
Wow. Okay. That's a big number.
It really is. And breaking down that $7,270, 3,009 dealers went to an outboard motor.
An investment in equipment.
And $3,750 for crawdaddies, which apparently is a professional service they hired for removal.
Okay. Makes sense.
So with those big crayfish costs, their cash position actually went down by $2,081.14, left them with an ending balance of $747.36 as of August 28th.
Seems low, but...
But, crucial point, they're still expecting about $7,000 from that SSD fund. It's an account receivable.
Okay. That changes the picture significantly.
Yeah. And they mentioned dues payment options in person, mail, or online. The report was approved, by the way. Motion by Sharon Hickson-Platzer, second by Carrie Nicklow.
So what does this all mean? I mean, the finances point directly, very clearly, toward the Rusty Crayfish issue, don't they?
Absolutely.
That's where the major resources are going. It underscores the urgency they feel about that particular challenge. It's not just talk. It's significant investment.
Okay, let's zoom out again. Look at the wider network. Irene Mullen gave a report on the Cook County Coalition of Lake Associations, CCFLA.
CCFLA.
Their motto is Protect, Preserve, Participate Lakes of Cook County.
A clear mission.
It's a pretty big group. 21 board members from different lake associations, road associations, even individuals. And they had three new lake associations join this year.
That's great. Shows growing collaboration. And this raises an important point about collective action, doesn't it? CCCOLA acts as this central hub. It multiplies the impact any single association could have on its own.
Yeah, strength in numbers.
Exactly. Sharing resources, coordinating efforts, having a louder voice.
And they seem pretty active. Meetings are the second Thursday of the month, some in person, some Zoom. open to anyone.
Good accessibility.
Their outreach includes things like the fisherman's picnic, canoe races, take a kid fishing, getting the word out via WTIP radio, and the Cook County News Herald, too.
Mm. Visible in the community?
Key concerns they mentioned. Surface water usage is a big one for members, especially for cabins.
Understandable.
And a specific call to action. Get the lead out. Talking about fishing tackle.
Right. An important environmental push.
Also, interesting detail, Hungry Jack Lake is using something called Fred's Binder to look into maybe requesting a wake surfing ordinance.
Shows that sharing of specific resources and strategies between lakes.
Okay, shifting slightly again. Cook County AIS, that's Aquatic Invasive Species and the Soil and Water Efforts.
Critical work.
AIS is doing boat inspections at landings. There was this example from June on Highway 61. They checked 10 boats. Four of them had their drain plugs in and were from out of state.
Yikes. That's exactly how invasives spread. Shows why inspections are needed.
Definitely. They're also surveying for spiny water fleas and doing calcium testing.
Monitoring key indicators.
And the Cook County Soil and Water Folks, SW, they offered presentations on algae and cyanobacteria, held a shoreline workshop, provide pH monitoring gear, and even do site visits.
A lot of support available there.
They also mentioned a simple test for blue-green algae, cyanobacteria, using just a jar from the MPCA. And you can contact Cook County Soil and Water if you have concerns. Their website, www.pca.state.mn.us, has info too.
Practical advice.
And a big push on shoreline stewards. Cook County still has over 90% of its original wetlands, which is amazing.
Incredible.
So the message is, plant native flowers, shrubs, trees, protect that shoreline.
Absolutely crucial.
And Tom Ryder reminded everyone about the county ordinance requires a 50-foot buffer of undisturbed land from the lakeshore.
Okay, let's unpack this. These are practical steps, right? From testing your water to planting natives to following the buffer rule.
Mm-hmm.
Real actions. And what's fascinating here is that blend. You've got education, like the workshops. You've got regulation, like the 50-foot buffer.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got hands-on monitoring, like the boat inspection.
Yeah, all angles covered.
That multi-pronged approach, it's really essential for protecting lake health. Those inspections and the buffer rule are direct preventative measures. Vital stuff.
Oh, and one more thing from this section, the Gunflint Loon Project.
Loons. Important indicator species.
Right. The goal is to get data on Cook County loon populations. There's concern based on declines seen in northern Wisconsin by a Dr. Piper.
So proactive monitoring.
Yeah, volunteers do observations every 2 weeks on different lake sections until the loons leave, and they put out a call. Caribou Lake wants volunteers for its own loon project next year.
Great to see that local initiative for wildlife.
All right, now let's focus right back on Caribou Lake itself. The Water Quality Report, presented by Larry Mullen.
The lake's health checkup.
Exactly. They monitor several key things. Phosphorus, chlorophyll, sexy disc depth, oxygen, calcium, and pH, using 5 consistent sampling sites.
Good. Consistent data collection.
Okay. Phosphorus first. Their goal is 15 parts per billion, ppb or less.
Which is a good, healthy level.
Right. The 2025 average, though they still had 2 recordings to go, was 16.3 ppb. So slightly above goal.
Hmm.
For comparison, 2024 was 14.9 ppb, so below goal.
So a bit of an uptick this year.
Yeah, and the thought mentioned was maybe high rainfall in 2025 washed more nutrients in. They said, not concerning yet. We'll keep an eye on it.
That makes sense. Watchful waiting. And this raises an important question, right? Why focus so much on phosphorus?
Yeah, why is it key?
Well, it's a primary nutrient. Think of it like fertilizer for the lake. Too much of it fuels algae blooms, reduces clarity, just degrades the whole system.
Yeah.
So keeping tabs on it, especially near that goal line, is vital.
Got it. Prevents bigger problems down the road.
Exactly.
Okay, the other parameters looked pretty good, actually. Chlorophylla, which measures algae.
Hmm.
Goal is 8 ppb or less. The 2025 average was 2.9 ppb.
Excellent. Well below the goal.
Sechi disc, that's water clarity. Goal is 6 feet or more visibility. The 2025 average, 7.3 feet.
Also exceeding the goal. Good clear water.
Oxygen and temperature, measured at the bottom of site 205, showed normal surface oxygen levels around 8 milligrams per liter.
Healthy for fish.
pH factor, the healthy range for lakes there is 7.2 to 8.3. Caribou's reading on August 28th was 7.75.
Right in the early zone.
And calcium, latest reading was 7.7. So mostly good news on the water quality front.
Yeah, generally positive indicators.
Though someone did raise a concern from the floor about a manure pile on Foothill Boulevard.
Ah, shows that link between land use nearby and potential lake impact. something to watch.
Okay, now, the main event, it seems, the Rusty Crayfish Battle. This was reported by Tom Ryder.
The major concern, clearly.
Yeah, he highlighted the specific harms. They wipe out native crayfish, destroy native water plants, and that leads to fish population declines.
A cascading negative effect.
But here's where it gets really interesting. The community is seriously fighting back. They have a clear strategy. As we heard in the financials, they hired craw daddies, the pro harvesters, for 6 weeks.
Professional help.
But also a huge volunteer effort. Someone loaned a boat, volunteers managed trap lines, Cathedral the Pines Camp used their boat with the association's traps, and lots of members just harvesting off their own docks.
A real community mobilization. And what's fascinating here, I think, is that blend. You've got the professional intervention, right? The hired gun, so to speak. But it's combined with this strong grassroots volunteerism.
Yeah, everyone pitching in.
That multifaceted approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's often the most effective way you can tackle these widespread environmental challenges. You need both the expertise and the community buy-in.
And the results. Pretty dramatic increase in harvesting. They're projecting 3,075 pounds removed this year.
Wow.
Which they estimate is about 130,000 individual crayfish.
130,000? That's incredible.
Yeah. Compare that to 60,000 last year in 2024. And only 12,000 the year before, 2023.
So a massive ramp up.
Huge escalation of efforts. So what does this all mean? It means they're making a tangible impact, pulling out vast numbers.
Definitely making a dent.
And the funding seems stable for now. That SSD fund we mentioned, it'll continue $50 per taxpayer times 138 taxpayers. Gives them $6,900 a year toward this.
Dedicated funding is key for long-term efforts.
Their future plans include building up the volunteer effort even more, maybe buying their own dedicated boat, getting more volunteers involved, starting the harvest earlier in the season, and maybe even exploring an internship.
Sounds like they're in it for the long haul,
yeah.
Planning ahead. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, I mean, those sheer numbers, 130,000 crayfish, it just demonstrates the incredible invasive potential of species like rusty crayfish.
Yeah, they multiply fast.
And it highlights the significant ongoing commitment needed to manage them. This isn't a one-and-done problem. It requires sustained effort.
And addressing specific pathways, too. A concern came up about rusties migrating from Murmur Creek.
A potential source population.
Right, and the need for some kind of barrier. The board's already on it. They've set up a subcommittee to work with the DNR on that specific issue.
Proactive. Good to see.
Okay, one last major topic from the meeting. The association's identity. Tom Ryder brought this up, too.
A name change discussion.
Yeah. They're thinking about changing from Caribou Lake Property Owners Association to something like Friends of Caribou Lake or maybe Stewards of Caribou Lake.
Interesting. Why the change?
Well, the reasons given were, first, the current name causes some confusion. People think it's like an HOA, a homeowners association, which it isn't.
Uh-huh, okay. Misleading.
And second, they feel it doesn't really represent their core mission accurately, which is about preserving and protecting the lake for everyone, not just property owners.
Makes sense. Broader stewardship focus.
So they're asking members for opinions and suggestions before the next meeting. Then the board will pick a name and bring it back for approval.
Sounds like a good process.
The plan for now is to use the new name as a DBA doing business as. The legal name for state filings, taxes, would stay the same for simplicity.
A practical approach.
But okay, let's unpack this. A name change might seem like a small thing, but it really speaks to the identity and the mission, doesn't it? How they see themselves and want others to see them?
Absolutely. And this raises an important question about branding, even for community groups. How an organization presents itself is powerful.
Yeah.
A name like Friends or Stewards can really convey purpose more effectively,
mm-hmm.
maybe attract broader support, volunteers, donations, beyond just the property owners,
mm-hmm.
especially when your mission is preservation. It signals inclusivity.
Good point. It's about perception and engagement.
Exactly.
All right, almost done. Sharon Hexum-Platzer just gave a couple of quick community announcements at the end.
Tying things together.
Yeah. Mentioned the Lutzen Fire Department's pancake breakfast and the Lutzen Flea Market. Just general community happening.
Nice local color.
And with that, the meeting adjourned at 12 p.m. So, pulling it all together, what does this deep dive show us? I mean, from county development plans down to the nitty-gritty of fighting invasive crayfish. These minutes really reveal a community that's deeply invested in its lake, in its future. We saw local governance in action, environmental protection efforts, collective action.
It's a snapshot of civic engagement, really.
Hmm.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, I think this deep dive shows that the health of our local places, our environments, our communities, it often really depends on these, you know, seemingly small, granular efforts.
Mm-hmm. The day-to-day work.
Yeah, by dedicated individuals, by associations like this one. The real work happens in these meetings, in these volunteer hours. And maybe that leaves us with a question to think about. What small, focused actions in your own community could potentially have a significant impact? What needs attention where you live?
That's a great takeaway, something for everyone to consider. Well, thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the Caribou Lake Minutes. Until next time, keep digging, keep learning.
Let's see, curious.